They were beginning here on the bottom of Kuf Amud Bet, two lines from the bottom. We have a case here. Otam b'nei Adam shekidshu b'beit Knesset. These people heard Kiddush in Shul, or they made Kiddush in Shul. Amarov, yidei yayin lo yotzu. With regards to the wine, they're not yotzei. Discuss that in 1 second. Yidei Kiddush yotzu. On the other hand, in terms of Kiddush, they're fine. Rav is of the belief that you do not require Kiddush b'makom su'uda. Since you do not require Kiddush b'makom su'uda, the Kiddush in the Beit Knesset will suffice to be a Kiddush. Now, Yidei Yayin Lo Yotzu is the Brach Ala Yayin. You make a Bori Pri Agafen as part of Kiddush. And we know from the Gemara in Brachot, when we learned it there, that if you make a Brach Ala Yayin Lifnei HaSuda, you make a Brach on the wine before the Suda, it covers the wine Achar HaSuda. And as Tosafot discusses here, as well as in Brachot, it actually covers the wine that's inside the meal, B'toch HaSuda. Because the yayin is l'shtiya beforehand, and if you have in mind to cover the yayin that's betocha suda, you do not need to make another bracha. This happens on Shabbat if you're making Kiddush, and a person has the intention to drink wine during the meal. The bori pri agafen that you make before the meal would cover the wine that one drinks during the meal. Now, if a person did not intend to drink and then later brings out wine during the meal, they would have to make a new bracha bori pri agafen. In addition to that, there is the bracha v'atov v'ameitiv, which is if the wine is better than the wine that you made on Kiddush, even though here Tosafot seems to indicate that it doesn't even have to be better, as long as it's different wine, that if it's from a different barrel, or obviously here a different bottle, then you would be able to make a bracha v'atov v'ameitiv as long as there's a minimum of 2 people at the table to make the bracha v'atov v'ameitiv. So in general, people drink wine at their meals, then they would be included. If you don't generally drink wine at your meals, which in many households that's the case, then you would have to make a bori pri agafen if wine was brought out during the meal. So what Rav is discussing here is that you're leaving the shul going home. The bori pri agafen in the shul is not going to help you for the wine that you want to drink at home. Too far away. It's what we call shinui makom. You're changing your location. By changing your location, you lose the bracha of yayin that you made in shul. It does not cover what you want at home. Although the Sfat Emet over here indicates this is actually talking about Dalet Kosot. I mean, that's the topic of the Perek. And when it says Yidei Yayin Lo Yatsu means you're not Yotze the Din of Dalet Kosot, because the Dalet Kosot need to be Yidei Chayrut. And even though Rab believes that you don't have a Din of Kiddush B'makom Suda, nevertheless for the Dalet Kosot you do require Suda, because that is Derech Chayrut. In order to have Derech Chayrut, you would have to have them adjacent or connected to the Suda. And that's what it means Yidei Yayin Lo Yatsa. And later on, when the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan says that they are Yotze Yayin, it means that you're Yotze Dalet Kosot, because for him, Shinim Makom doesn't matter. And therefore, wherever you're drinking, it's still considered to be part or attached to the Se'uda.
Shmuel Amar, Av Yidei Kiddush Lo Yatsu. Even Kiddush does not work here, because it's not Kiddush B'makom Se'uda, which is the requirement that Shmuel has it to be Kiddush B'makom Se'uda. The Rishbam here, Tosafot brings one of the 2 reasons, the Rishbam brings another reason as to what is the requirement of Kiddush B'makom Se'uda. Why is there a requirement of Kiddush B'makom Se'uda? So he first brings Birkarat al Shabbat Oneg from the Pasuk that we quote from Yeshayahu. Birkarat al Shabbat Oneg, B'makom Shatar Kored al Shabbat, Klomar Kriyad Kiddush, Sham Tehe Oneg. There's a correlation or connection between Oneg Shabbat and Kriyat al Shabbat. Kriyat al Shabbat being the Kiddush, that Kiddush has to be the place where there is Oneg. So that creates this connection between the Kiddush and the Makom Suda, that the two need to be joined. Inami. And then he brings the second answer, which is Svarahi. It's logical. Me ikva kiddush ala yayin. The fact that kiddush is required to be done ala yayin, mistam ala yayin shbetshat su'uda ugva dechashiv. Obviously, it must be done about wine that is an es-su'uda, because otherwise, what's the purpose of having wine? Now, that's not necessarily so clear, because there's this din of saying shira ala yayin. We use yayin for giving significance to events, including havdola, where we have yayin, and that's not yayin shbetocha su'uda. Nevertheless, the Rishbam indicates that maybe because the requirement of yayin is there, that it must be the prelude to a meal anyway. And if that's the case, then it must include the meal. The yayin must be connected to the meal. So those are the 2 reasons he brings down why we have to have kiddush b'makom se'uda. The Gemara says, "Ela Rav, lama le dekdushe bebeite." Then according to Rav, if you're already yotze with the kiddush in shul, why bother to make kiddush when you get home? The Gemara says, "Kedei lotzi banav ubnei beito." In order to be motzi, the rest of his family, his wife, his family, they did not hear Kiddush in Shul, therefore they require Kiddush. So he's making Kiddush on their behalf. Ushmuel, lamalei dekdushe bebeit knishto. According to Shmuel, if the Kiddush in Shul does not work, then why bother to make Kiddush in Shul? So lafuke orchim yedei chuvatan. So take care of the guests that are staying in the Shul. Dachlu v'shatu v'ganu v'beit knishta. They eat, they drink, and they sleep in the Shul. So as the Shmuel l'tamei, and this is Shmuel l'shitato, Damar Shmuel ein kiddush ela b'makom se'uda. That you have to have kiddush in a place of se'uda. So now a number of things we have to just quickly address over here. First of all, this idea that they ate, they drank, and they slept in the shul. We're going to get to the Gemara Megillah, which says that none of these items are permitted in the shul. That's number one. Number two is, even if you talk about the shuls in Bavel, what we call shuls in Chutz Laaretz, that are built outside, they're built on a condition that they can be utilized for items other than the Kedusha, because eventually they're going to be destroyed or taken away. B'sman HaMashiach, so they built them outside. Even there, Tosafot over here says, doesn't matter, that's only once they're not in use anymore, does the Tanai matter? But even if you believe that Tanai is functioning while they're still stand, that may allow eating and drinking, possibly, but definitely not sleeping in the shul. So what are we talking about here when they're eating, drinking, and sleeping in the shul? So Tosafot, the answer is over here, it's a famous answer that most know, is that they were rooms adjacent to the shul. There are rooms that are around the shul, and the guests stayed in those rooms that were around the shul, but from there they're able to see the shul, they're able to see those rooms from in the shul, and so because of that, they were able to make kiddush in the shul, and that would help them out in terms of their eating, drinking, and staying in the shul itself. Again, it wasn't literally in the Beit Knesset, it was in the adjacent rooms, but the adjacent rooms were connected enough to the shul that you yotze. There are others who want to suggest that this is a mitzvah derabim. You're allowed to use the shul for things that are mitzvah derabim. Over here, they're feeding people who are either aniyim or guests that are orchim. And because it's a mitzvah that's incumbent on the community as a whole and a mitzvah derabim, that there might be a dispensation here because of the mitzvah derabim to allow the guests to stay literally in the shul, to eat, to drink, and to sleep in the shul, because that's a mitzvah derabim that overrides or at least allows one to use something that has kedushat Beit HaKnesset. Obviously, the modern day question is where this doesn't really transpire. What's the din with regards to making Kiddush in Shul? And so there are two approaches to this. One approach, the Tosfot over here says, that today, since we don't have this, you don't make Kiddush in Shul. There's no reason, there's no necessity to make Kiddush anymore because whatever is being described here in the Gemara does not take place anymore. The necessity has fallen away. So since the necessity has fallen away, there's no need to make Kiddush. On the other hand, and there are others of the Rishonim, who believe that one makes Kiddush irrespective of whether this is still in place. Now, you have the problem, which is, if you're making Kiddush in Shul, you have a Bracha Levatala, and you have a Kiddush Shelo B'Makom Seuda. Because if you get rid of all what the Gemara is describing here in terms of the guests, all you're left with is a Kiddush that doesn't function as a Kiddush. So why is it that we're making Kiddush in Shul, according to those Shuls that have the Minog? In Eretz Yisrael, it's less prevalent. In Chutz Laaretz, it's more prevalent that they make Kiddush in the shul, but why do we do that? Again, Tosfot says, we don't. You don't make it. It's a bracha levatala. There's no reason to make it, to make the Kiddush. Other Rishonim believe that you do make Kiddush. So either it's because when the takana was put in place, that was the takana, irrespective, meaning that the takana is put in place for Kiddush Beit Knesset, without the consideration of what is there or isn't there, but it's always there in case that one needs it. The most prevalent approach to this is that Kiddush B'Makom Seuda is only a din derabanan. And therefore the rabbanan can determine, they can waive it in cases where they want to institute something and have a low plug and they don't worry about Kiddush B'Makom Seuda. And that might be what's happening over here, which is that places that continue to make Kiddush, even though it's not a Kiddush B'Makom Seuda, even though it looks like a bracha levatala, nevertheless they can waive that din of Kiddush B'Makom Seuda, at least with regards to making Kiddush in Beit HaKnesset. And so that's the most prevalent way of dealing with amongst the Rishonim. Now, Savar Mina, they thought from this, Hani Milei Bi Bayit LeBayit, that the problem of making Kiddush B'Makom Seuda is only if you're moving from house to house. Aval B'Makom B'Makom B'Chad Beit Lo. But if you move from one location to another location within a single house, it's not a problem. Now we're going to see that that's just not the case. But here are the girsa that we have in our Gemara, is Hani Milei Bi Bayit LeBayit. Aval B'Makom B'Makom, then no, and then the Gemara is going to reject it. If you look in Tosafot, you already can see an alternative girsa, but he says, "Makom makom chata berish cheder mi bayit o mi bayit naliyah, kamo mi igra leagra, avam mi pina pina yesh kiddush." But moving from one corner to another corner, there is kiddush. The reason that Tosafot is doing this is because the girsa of the Rabbeinu Chananel, Rif, and others is a girsa in the Gemara here is Hani Milei Makom Lamakom. Aval mipina lepina michad beita, it's not. Now this will have an afkamina as we move through the sugya here, because the Gemara is going to bring this up again and come up with a different conclusion. So, being you aware of it now, there is an alternative girsa here. The girsa that we have in our Gemara, which is the girsa that Rashbam and other of the Rishonim, which is that the havamina is that this only applies from house to house, but within a house you can move from one location to another. The girsa of the Rif, the Rabbeinu Chananel, and some of the Gaonim is that hanimile mi makom le makom. I would have thought that's only when you move from one place to another in a house. But mepina lepina, if you move from one corner to the other within a room, that would be fine. Now the Gemara is going to reject that. That means that the Gemara rejects, according to the Rashbam, the Gemara rejects this idea of makom and makom is okay. It's not okay. But mepina lepina, according to the Rashbam, would be fine. On the other hand, according to those Geonim and the Rabbeinu Chananel, who say that mepina lepina is the Avamina here, that means that even from corner to corner within a house is not going to be good. You have to make Kiddush literally, b'makom suda. Literally where you're going to have this suda. Correct. It's all within Shmuel, who says you need Mekiddush Makom Suda. So, Amalo Ravana Bar Tachlifa, Zimin Sagin, Avakamina Kamei de Shmuel. There are many times that I was by Shmuel. V'nochid me'igro la'aro. And he used to move down from the attic down to downstairs. V'hodar me'kadish. And then he would make Kiddush. So now that example seems to indicate that even me'makom le'makom, it's problematic. You're in Chad Beita, you're in one house. And he's moving from the upstairs to the downstairs, and he still would move downstairs in order to make Kiddush b'makom su'uda. Again, according to those that say mipina lepina, it's a rejection of that havamina. They had an open loft or an open architecture where it was mipina lepina in terms of mi'ira l'agra. Question of why Shmuel moved downstairs. Start Kiddush up there and then he moved downstairs, or he moved downstairs before he made Kiddush. So the different opinions.
The Sfat Emet says it revolves around how you look at the word v'hadar mikadesh. Does hadar kiddush mean that he again made Kiddush? Or is hadar kiddush should mean after all of that, he made Kiddush? If you say it's the first way, it would indicate that he made Kiddush upstairs. Well, he shouldn't be able to do that, because that would have been a bracha l'matalo, or if it was Kiddush v'lo makom suda. So what the Sfat Emet suggests was that there were people eating upstairs that had a suda, and he made Kiddush on their behalf. Then he came downstairs and made Kiddush again for himself, where he was going to have his suda. Or, which seems to be the more likely interpretation of the Gemara, which is, Hadar Mikadesh, after he had done all this, after he came down, he made Kiddush for the first time, and that's why we have a proof from here that Mi Malkom the Malkom or the Pina the Pina is still a problem for Kiddush of Malkom Sudo, and that it has to literally be in the place where you're going to eat that you make the Kiddush.
Alright, Rav Ravuna Savar any Kiddush of Malkom Sudo, Ravuna also holds that. The Ravuna Kaddish Vit Akrele Shrago. The Ravuna made Kiddush, and then the candle blew out. Va'ailele the Mane, the Beganana, the Rabu Bray. Then he moved all of his stuff out to the cheder chupa of Rabo, his son, to have a shrago, because there was a candle, the kodish, and then he made kiddush, vitamide, and he ate something. So again, now he made kiddush again. It's clear that he didn't think that his original kiddush was sufficient, and he went ahead and made kiddush again, indicating that he needs kiddush be makom suda. Alma kasavar, it's clear here that he holds, ain kiddush, ele be makom suda. There's only Kiddush b'makom suda. We'll get to the fact that the candle blew out, what that has relevance in terms of the suda, because there's another case here, and then we'll come back and discuss that. Okay, so I should have mentioned it, but the Rav Huna's situation, in their day, they used to, when a young man got married, they used to actually build an extension to the house, a room onto the house, which was attached to the house, and was called Cheder Chatanim, which was a extra room, which was their first apartment, which they took care of them, that the newlywed couple lived in this apartment or this room that was adjacent, attached to the house, and was built specifically for this purpose, for the newly married couple to move into. So when he moved the kelim, when he moved over there, that it was within the house. He wasn't taking the kelim anywhere because it was a part of his house at that point. Rav Abba Savar, in Kiddush Elo B'Makom Suda, Amar Abaye. Abaye was a Talmid of Rabbo. Kavana Beimar, when we were by Beimar, the master being Rabbah, his Rebbe, Kiavan Mekadesh, when he made Kiddush, Amarlan, Ti'imiyu Mide. You gotta eat something to be Yotze with this Kiddush. Right, so here at Rishonim, Baton Mide, most of them believed that he was giving them bread. They were gonna have bread to eat, which would qualify as a Suda for Suda Shabbat. Baton Mide doesn't simply mean that they're having a little fresh spice or mizonot, that they're really gonna have something to eat. They were gonna have what would qualify as a Suda. It wouldn't be a full Suda Shabbat, but enough to qualify that it would be classified as Kiddush B'Makom Suda. Dilma Adazlitu Lushpiza, because it may be until you get back to your hosts or where you're staying, the bed and breakfast that they stayed at, the candle will blow out, and then you're not going to end up having Kiddush b'makom Suda. Over kiddush ad ha'ocha, and the kiddush that I just made for you, lo nafkitu. You're not yotze, the ain't kiddush ma'el ba'makum suda, because if you don't eat now, you're not going to have kiddush ma'makum suda. So he says, listen, if you don't eat now, the kiddush I made is not going to help you. And if you get home and there's no candle there, you're not going to be able to make kiddush in that location. So the Rishbam over here says, oh, you know what they'll have to do? They'll have to go to sleep, and then they'll eat in the morning. Because if the candle's out, they're not going to eat now, they'll go to sleep, and they'll do it in the morning. They're not going to eat at all. Because as soon as they come back, they see it's dark, they're going to go to sleep, and they won't eat until in the morning. That's what it says. What about the fact that they're not going to have Sudat Shabbat at all? They're going to go Friday night without a meal. So what are you in it? There's an obligation of Sudat Shabbat. Why is he worried about that? Forget about Kiddush B'makom Suda. I know Mishum Shiyochlu La'asod L'machar Shlosh Sudot. You can do all three meals on Shabbat itself, which is Alacha. If you miss the meal on Friday night, you have to have three meals on the Shabbat day itself. You miss that one, you got to make it up the next morning so you can make it up. Oh, Shema Yochlu La'achol B'makom She'esham Ner Ve'ein Yayin. Problem is that maybe there's a separation between the candlelight and the wine. Which is that maybe they'll get to the location, there will be candlelight there, they will be able to eat the Sudat Shabbat, but they'll have a problem with the wine. They won't have wine there, and therefore they won't be able to make Kiddush. So he wants them to be Yotze with the Kiddush now, so that when they get back home to eat the meal, they'll be able to eat the meal without having to make Kiddush. Because there's some, whatever reason, they don't have wine where they're going to eat when there's a candlelight there.
But according to both the Rashbam and Tosafot, the issue is simply a practical issue, that when they get there, it won't be candlelight, then they won't eat the meal. It's not a halachic issue. On the other hand, if you look in the Mordechai says, Perish, ki tzarich ner l'kiddush. You need a candle to make Kiddush. You cannot make Kiddush without Neirot Shabbat. Aval mishum suda ein chashashak yochim lechol below ner. But when the suda itself, you might be able to eat without the ner. Might be because Kiddush is the primary aspect of the suda and is what defines the suda, Sudat Shabbat, that Mordechai says it only applies to the Kiddush. Although you could see someone extending that and saying that the same problem exists in the meal itself, that it would be assur to have a meal on Shabbat without the candlelight that is associated with it.
Question is, what does the candle have anything to do with in terms of Suda? So we saw back in Bamei Madlikin, there Rashi and Tosafot have a slightly different phraseology with regards to this. The Gemara there says, Ner Shabbat Chova, that the Ner of Shabbat is an obligation. And the reason they say over there is because the Ner Shabbat is a facilitator of the ability to have a Su'uda. You need to have a candle, you have to have light by the Su'uda.
Rashi over there, in interpreting what it means that Ner Shabbat Chova, says, Kavod Shabbat Hu. Shein Su'uda Chashuval B'makom Orkein Yomama. That the necessity for the Hadlakat Nerot Shabbat is a din in Kavod Shabbat. It's a din in Kavod Shabbat, and that it enhances the meal. It's not integral to the meal, but it enhances the meal. On the other hand, Tosafot, in a slightly different nuance, Lashon says about this, Hadlaka ner b'shabat chova, perish b'makom suda, to chova hi shisod b'makom aner mishimoneg. You must eat the meal in the place where the nerot are, because that is integral to the oneg shabbat, and making the meal qualify for oneg shabbat. So Rashi sees it as an enhancer of the meal, whereas Tosafot sees it as an integral part of the oneg shabbat. And that might explain the difference in opinions that we see here.
Which is the difference between whether it's ma'akev, the din of the meal. If it's integral to the oneg Shabbat, then maybe if you don't have candlelight, you don't have a meal. If it's simply kavod Shabbat, then the oneg Shabbat still exists from eating the meal, even though you don't have kavod Shabbat of lighting the candle. So you could maybe separate between the two. That might explain the difference in opinions as to whether candlelight forfeits your ability to eat the meal on that night. So everybody agrees that you have to light where you eat. The question is, do you have to light in the other rooms as well? So the question is it just an enhancement of Oneg Shabbat that you light the candles, or is it a necessity? In order to have a Sudat Shabbat, the Sudat Shabbat has to be done with the candles there. It's not called Sudat Shabbat unless you have candlelight. If you're in the dark, does it qualify as a Sudat Shabbat? That might have to do with the phraseology, again, of Rashi and Tosafot in Gemara and Bava Melikin, how they describe the candlelight vis-a-vis the Sudat.
Talking about candles, there's other light. Nowadays, the
All right. That's a fair question. Today, where we have electric lights, then the candles have really, I would say, shifted already. It shifts already in the time of the Rishonim, but it's much more obvious today, which is in the time of the Rishonim, where you have in the Balei HaTosfot living in places that are extremely far north, whether it's in France and other places, where during the summertime, they're eating when it's light outside, because they start Shabbos before it's dark outside. So the lighting of candles in that sense has no bearing on the meal, because you light the candles, you're eating when it's still daylight. So the candles don't have an impact. So what you see is a shift in the view of candles. When you say that it's a chovah obligation to light it, they move from a practical lighting of candles, where the candles are there to facilitate the meal, to more of a religious ceremonial lighting of candles. You already see that by the time you get to the Rishonim of the Balei HaTosafot, in their way that they're mityaches to candles or candle lighting on Shabbat, in terms of it becoming a religious ceremonial lighting of the candles, not necessarily to facilitate light. That has impact in terms of questions about bracha. Do you make a bracha on the candles of Shabbat? We discussed this back in Bamei Malikin. The Gemara never mentions a bracha on lighting of candles of Shabbat. It's a machloket in the Rishonim as to whether you do make a bracha on the lighting of candles for Shabbat. Now, if you believe that it's simply a ceremonial religious thing, you got to believe that there's a bracha associated with it, because otherwise there's no purpose in lighting the candles. Candles don't serve any functional purpose when you're eating, when it's light out. And so there must be that there's a bracha. That's almost like the assumption of the Rishonim, because otherwise, why would you be lighting candles if there's no significance in terms of a mitzvah to light candles that you'd make a bracha on? There are others of the Rishonim that view it otherwise and say no. But that already brings up the issue that you're raising, is that today when we have electric lights, the lighting of the candles, what's the story? The answer is that it is problematic. It's not so simple. And the recommendation of many is that when one lights the candles on Erev Shabbat, that they turn on the light. They turn off a light and then turn on a light at the same time. I mean, that when you make the bracha is made on the candles because you need a flame and that and so on and so forth, but you also turn on the light. So you get both aspects. You get the ceremonial aspect of lighting the candles, but you also get the functional side, which is that you turn on a light in the room that you're going to eat in, and therefore the bracha can be chal on both of those actions, both on the turning on the light as well as the lighting of the candles, so you don't run into that problem, because otherwise, right, it's a question. The candles then serve solely as a ceremonial religious event, and not as a functional, because the light that's being provided is being provided by the light. Now, there are those that talk about it being not Oneg Shabbat, but rather Kavod Shabbat, and that might actually be the nafkamina here as to why you light candles. Do you light candles for Oneg Shabbat or Kavod Shabbat? That again, the Rishonim discuss. It's in the Rambam, he mentions that one place as Oneg, one place as Kavod, but the Rishonim argue about whether it's Kavod Shabbat. If it's Oneg Shabbat, then the question is relevant, because Oneg Shabbat relates to the meal or the Suda itself, and that might be what we're discussing here. You can't have the Suda without the candles. If it's Kavod Shabbat, that it's an honor, for instance, you go to a wedding, and they have candlelight at the tables. The candlelight there is not a functional light. It's giving status or stature to the meal, because that's something that is of Kavod. So in that case, the lighting of the candles might be functional. If it functions as Kavod Shabbat, might be fine, even if you have electric lights there, because they're simply there to enhance the meal, to have a candlelight dinner, or the candlelight dinner. The candlelights are not the sole source of light at the dinner. So there, if it relates to Kavod Shabbat, then it might be easier. Even when people speak about Kavod Shabbat, they still speak about it in the context of a meal, that the candle light at the meal is something that gives Kavod Shabbat. Shalom Bayit, but that again, when we're talking about an era of electric lights, that's not the issue. Almost everyone focuses on the Makom Seuda as being the central place for the candlelight. Obviously, not in a place where it's dangerous. When there are children there, you have to take into consideration those facts, which is that you don't want to end up in a dangerous situation. So we adjust for that. I mean, the optimal place to light them is on the table itself where you're eating. But with children there, obviously that presents a serious challenge sometimes. All right, so now the Gemara says, V'ini, is that really true that Abaye thinks this? Is this really true that Rabba practiced this way? V'amar Abaye komili demar Rabba obi kirav. Everything that my Rebbe, Rabba did was follow the position of Rav. Bar mihani tzlat, except for these three things where he paskin like Shmua. David kishmo, that he paskin like Shmua. Matirim mi beged the beged, one is allowed to move tzitzit from one beged to another beged. If he only has one pair of strings or four or some of strings that he has to use, and he has this beged that's four-cornered, and he wants to put it on, and it's on the other beged, he can untie them from this one and put it onto the next one. Despite the fact that Shmuel might believe that there's a chiyuv on the beged, a chiyuv mama, not on the person, nevertheless, he still believes that it's better that the one that you're wearing has tzitzit on it than the one in the drawer has tzitzit on it. So we allow you to move tzitzit from one beged to another. Madaklim and near by Nerot Chanukah. We allow you to light from one candle to the next directly. You don't need to worry about the problem of utilization of the Nerot Chanukah. You're allowed to do this. Halacha Rav Shimon b'Greira. Halacha is like Shimon when it comes to Davar She'eno Mitkavein. The Tanya, Rav Shimon Omer. Gorer Adam Mita Kisei V'Safsal. B'Shabbat, a person can drag along a chair, a bed, or a bench on Shabbat. U'Bad Shalik Avin L'Sot Charitz. As long as he doesn't intend to make a groove in the ground, some sort of problem where the weight is going to create a problem in the ground. Because that would be a malacha, if it's in the house, a malacha of Meshave gumot, which would be binyon, if it's out in the field, there's a problem of harisha, plowing or fixing the field. So you can't do that on Shabbat. If it's a pasuk reisha, if it's going to happen automatically, even Rabbi Shimon agrees that it's problematic. If there's a chance it won't happen, then it's a davar she'enu mitkavein, and over there Rabbi Shimon says it's mutar, Rabbi Yehuda says it's asur. Rab paskins like Rabbi Yehuda, Shmuel paskins like Rabbi Shimon. So here Rabba held like Shmuel, who paskin like Rabbi Shimon. So my answer is no, chumrei de Rav Abud. He only did like the chumrot of Rav. But the kulot of Rav, he did not paskin like. So over here, it would turn out it's a kula. Rav is saying that you don't need kiddush b'malkum suda. So over there, he did not hold like Rav. In terms of the position that we've seen before in the Gemara and Erevin, that you're not allowed to hold like the chumrot of everybody. Over here, that's what seems to be what Rav was doing. Rav was cherry picking and saying, I'm going to only hold like the chumrot of Rav, and I'm going to hold like the chumrot of Shmuel, except for these three where I paskin like Shmuel the kula. So how can he take the chumrot? If you hold like somebody, if you paskin like Rav, he's got to take all of his positions, not some of them. So the Gemara over there already qualified. Tosafot over there says, the Rashbam says it over here, that's only when the kula and the chumrah are soter. You only cannot take the chumrah of different individuals when they're mutually exclusive. But when you take the chumrah of different parties, but they have nothing to do with each other, over there, that may be permissible. So there's no problem. There, the Gemara discusses something that is a mutually exclusive position, where if you pass them like one, and then take the chumrah on the other side, it turns out that it's a chumrah meveli de kula. And therefore, you have to pass them like the chumrah and the kula. You can't pass like two chumrah, because otherwise you make no sense anymore, because you are soter yourself by taking on the two chumrah. So over here, he wasn't doing that. Now, in the end, all the Rishonim say here, despite the fact that we're talking about Rav and Shmuel here, and we know the halacha, what's the din with regards to Rav and Shmuel? B'minei de mamoninot, in money matters, then the halacha is k'shmuel, b'minei de surei. And Isur, the halacha is like Rav. That means over here, you have machloket Rav and Shmuel, you should paskin like Rav, which is that there is no requirement of kiddush b'malkum suda. Despite the fact that we paskin like Shmuel, that you do require kiddush b'malkum suda because of the fact that we have support from the Amorai here, that Rav Huna and Rabba both subscribed, and it seems like Abai as well, subscribed to this position of Shmuel, of Kiddush B'malkum Suda. So since he gets support from the other Amoraim, therefore we paskin like Shmuel over here, despite the fact that the principles will lead us to paskin like Rav. And we believe that you do require a Kiddush B'malkum Suda. And that means that the Mekadesh himself has to be a participant in the Suda. There is an exception. The Rashbam mentions it here. The Mishnah Brewing brings it as well, which is, it's not the best situation, but for instance, if someone's going home, and there's a family that needs kiddush to be made for them, but he's not going to eat there, he's going to eat in his own home, but they ask him to stop by to make kiddush for him, he is allowed to make kiddush for them as long as those people that he makes kiddush for are b'makom suda. So actually, the person who is making the kiddush, it must be done b'makom suda, but it may not necessarily have to be his suda, right? And he doesn't necessarily have to be toim. Again, the best situation is that he does eat from it, he partakes of the suda and so on and so forth. But in a situation where he has pressure, he's pressed for the fact that he wants to go home, he's going to eat there, then he's allowed to make kiddush for these people who are going to eat their suda there. And that is still classified as kiddush b'malkum suda, despite the fact that the mekadesh himself is not partaking of the particular suda where he is being mekadesh.
And many of the Rishonim note here that he can't even taste, be toim from the Kiddush, because since it's not Kiddush for him, because it's not Kiddush Malkum Suda for him, he's not allowed to eat or be toim before Kiddush. And therefore, he can't be toim this Yayin. The people who drink the wine will be those people that are Yotzei with his Kiddush. And when he goes home, he'll make Kiddush, and then he can be toim. But he can't be toim before his Kiddush, and therefore, he can't taste of the wine that he's making Kiddush for those people that are there.
Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Af Yedei Yayin Nami Yatsu. And Rabbi Yochanan says, even the din of Yayin, they're Yotzei. So now, here you have Rabbi Yochanan arguing on both Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel both said that Yidei Yayin lo Yotzu. Everybody agrees that Yidei Yayin lo Yotzu. But now you have Rabbi Yochanan that's saying that, Af Yidei Yayin am Yotzu. Even the Yayin, when you make the bracha for Yayin in the shul, that covers your Yayin when you get home. Now by saying Af also, that's interesting, because that seems to indicate that he thinks Kiddush also is good. And then you have Rabbi Yochanan and Rav against Shmuel. Because when we have Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, Alach Rabbi Yochanan, Rav and Shmuel, Alachakir Rav. Now you have Rabbi Yochanan supporting Rav, again, which would give more tokif to Rav's position, despite that fact, because of the later Amoraim supporting the position of Shmuel, we pass from like Shmuel that it's Kiddush Makom Suda. Now Gemara says, V'azda Rabbi Yochanan Tamei. This is Rabbi Yochanan, the Shita Dod. Am Rav Chanin Bar Abaya, Am Rav Padot, Am Rabbi Yochanan. Echad Shinu Yayin, Ve'echad Shinu Makom, Ein Tzarech Levarech. When it comes to changing wine, if you have new wine in the meal, you don't have to make a new Bori Priya Gofen. And you don't need to, if you change locations, make a new Borei Priya Gofen. So Meitve, is that really true? Shinu Makom, Tzarech Levarech. Shinu Yayin, Ein Tzarech Levarech. When you change locations, you have to make a new Bracha. when you change your wine, you don't have to make a new bracha, which is the way that we paskin, that if you change your location, you're going to have to make a new bracha. But if you change the wine, if you open up a new bottle during the meal, you might have to make a tova meitiv, but you will not have to make a new bari bri hagafen. To Yuvta, Rabbi Yochanan, to Yuvta, this brita certainly causes a big problem for Rabbi Yochanan. That's another reason why we would paskin like Shmuel, again, because Rabbi Yochanan now is rejected. His support for Rav is precarious because his position is not such a strong position.
Even though the Totav over here is only on the Yayin part of Rabbi Yochanan's position, not on his Kiddush B'Makom Psuda position, nevertheless, it is a weakened position of Rabbi Yochanan.
Yotiv Ravidi Bavin Kamed Rav Chista, Yotiv Rav Chista Vekamer Mishmed Rav Huna. Hada Mar Shini Makom Tzarech Levareich, that you say that when you change locations you have to make a brocha, Lo Shanu El Mi Bayit Lepayit. That's only true when you move from house to house. No. But if you move from location to location, no. You look in the Rabbeinu Chananel, you can also see it in the Masorah Tashas, he's quoting it from the Marsha as well. But the Girsa in the Rabbeinu Chananel is, Lo amru elam yibayit labayit, aval mipina lapina lo. But from corner to corner, no. So what you have here is a consistency amongst the Rishonim, which is that if you had before by Kiddush, you had pina lapina, they also had mipina lapina po. If before you had me makom la makom, they also have makom la makom here as well. The Rishbam is consistent, so is the Rabbeinu Chananel. But that presents a huge problem, because Rav Huna just said that the only time you need to make a new bracha rishona is if you move from house to house. But if you move from location to location within the house, you do not need to make a new bracha rishona. Whereas by Kiddush, that was the Havamina, but we rejected it. That means now that the din will actually be different. The din will be different for bracha rishona versus Kiddush. By Kiddush, you can't even move me makom la makom within the house, according to the Girsa of the Rishbam. According to the Girsa of Rabbeinu Chananel, you can't even move Mipina Lepina. On the other hand, when it comes to Bracha Rishona, according to the Rabbeinu Chananel, you can move Mipina Lepina. Or according to the Rishbam, you can move Mimakom Lemakom, and you would not have to make a new Bracha. So how come Kiddush has a different standard than Bracha Rishona? They're both dealing with the same issue, which is, where is your Kviat Suda? So that when you move, you don't change your meal. If you don't change your location, then you can continue with the same bracha. So why does it make a difference for Kiddush versus the brachot over here? The one way to solve the problem is to be Tosafot. Tosafot actually has the girsa be different. In the case before, he said makom la makom, and over here he says the girsa is mi pina la pina. By doing that, he solves his problem, because then before when it said you can't move, it means mi makom la makom. But you could move mi pina la pina. And over here where it says you can move, it's mi pina la pina. Mean that he makes the girsot match. So by doing that, he has no stira between Kiddush and Bracha Rishona, by saying the girsot over there is Mimakom Lamakom, and the girsot over here is Mipina Lepina. But according to Rashi and the Rabbeinu Chananel, who are consistent in their girsot, then why is Kiddush different than Bracha Rishona? So the Ran answers, the Ran has a position over here, which says that there's a difference between Kiddush Mimakom Suda, which deals with bread and hamotzi, versus dealing with other items here that we're talking about, which are wine and other items, or other food items. By other food items, the via is the house, meaning that you have a larger area to move around. When one drinks wine, they drink wine in a larger area, or that larger area is considered to be his makom, quote-unquote, suuda. So that's why over here, the Gemara gives you a broader area in within which you do not have to make a new bracha, because we're talking about yayin over here. On the other hand, when it deals with hamotzi and suda, kviat suda, there we don't allow for any movement. Kviat suda is at the table. You stay in one location, that's where you eat, you don't move around at all. That's the way the Ran deals with the sugya over here. The Ran says that there's a difference between bread and full-fledged suda versus items that you have a bracha rishona on that are eaten within a confined area, but they're still not as locked down as a si'uda. That's the Ran's approach. There's a broader definition of makom suda for yayin than there is for Kiddush or Kiddush b'makom suda, which is bread. The Maram Chalava has a slightly different view, nuanced difference between them, but he talks about just the definition of makom suda is in the location. Now obviously the nafkamina between them will be in a case where it's bread involved. Because according to the Ran, when bread's involved, you can't move at all. Whereas for the Maram Chalava, that's not the case. The case has to do with where your house is considered to be a location when it comes to Bracha Rishona. For Kiddush B'Mafsuda, we have a much more narrow definition, because the Kiddush has got to be literally where you're going to eat. And therefore, the definition is narrowed in the case of Kiddush B'Mafsuda versus Suda as a whole. The Suda might be able to move through the house, but Kiddush B'Makom Suda, the Kiddush got attached to the Suda, and therefore it's got to be immediately in the location where the Suda is. So that's the Maram Chalava. So the Nafkamina, again, will be with regards to bread. According to the Maram Chalava, you have a broader movement of bread, whereas according to the Ran, you would have to stay in a single location. The Locha is
And this we'll deal a lot with tomorrow. Tomorrow's daf has a lot of this in terms of these ideas of moving around. But just the broader context of halacha is that a person may not move around when it comes to brachot rishonot. The Shulchan Aruch brings the halacha al pi those that say that you cannot move at all, that even mipina lepina is a problem when it comes to kiddush. That means only for suda you can move mipina lepina, but makom lemakom you cannot move. That's the way the Shulchan Aruch brings it there. But then the Ber Halacha afterwards says, well, I can show you that the majority of the rishonim don't hold that way. And therefore, it gives you a much broader swath to move around. So because of that, he paskins, I mean, makom makom would be okay, based on that. But the evidence, if you want to move makom makom, then you can move. Because of the fact that the majority of Rishonim allowed that to be heaven. Generally, we think, mepina lepina is certainly okay. Except for Kiddush, according to Maram Chalau, for Kiddush from makom suda, he thinks that no, that you can't, you have no movement at all. That's according to the Maram Chalau. So the two exceptions to the rule are, if you can see the location. If from wherever you're sitting you can see the other location, that's considered to either be Kiddush Makom Suda, or that's considered to be Pina Pina, even though it's in two different rooms. That's one exception. The other exception to the rules, if you have it in mind originally. If you know from the start that you're going to move, then you have a little more flexibility, at least with Bracha Rishona, if you have it in mind to move beforehand. We'll see tomorrow, and tomorrow's daf, I'll discuss it more, but Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva if one continues to eat the whole time. That if you're eating throughout the whole process, if you're drinking wine and you carry the cup with and you continue to drink to the new location, that might actually work to keep you within the same context or confines. But this really has to do with the continuation of our Gemara and Gemara tomorrow, which adds, what is the definition of Shinui Makom? Right, so now we continue. Amalei Rav Idi Bar Avin. Hachi Tanin Li B'matnita D'Bei Rav Hinik. I have a braita in the base medrash of Rav Hinik that supports this position that you just stated, that Shini Malkum requires a bracha. Or some say that I have a braita that says exactly what you are saying over here. Now the next line in the Gemara, the Rashbam takes out, and he thinks that it's completely unnecessary. The Gemara never asks questions like this. He says, so what, Rav Huna is coming to teach us a braita? Our Gemara says, Rav Huna matnita lo shmile. The Rashbam says that's obvious. Meaning that the Amoraim are required to know the Mishnayot. They're not required to know Braita. And we have throughout Shas that an Amora quotes something in the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Ochi, that we have a Braita that supports it. Nobody asks, oh, why did he, what, he told us something that's in a Braita? Because either the Braita sometimes were not clear whether they were Mishabeshta, whether they were authentic and they were okay to use, or they just didn't know the Braita. And so for the Gemara here to pose a question, which is what Rav Huna is telling you, something that's found in a Braita, that's not necessary to make a statement like that and have the Gemara answer that, because that's the derech of the Gemara throughout Shas. And therefore the Rashbam wants to eliminate these two lines that we just read. Okay, but two read Yotiv Rav Chista. So that was the quote in the name of Rav Huna. And now we have Rav Chista. Now Rav Chista is not necessarily arguing on Rav Huna before, but rather he's qualifying and defining the statement that he made before, which is Yotiv Rav Chista, v'kami shmei d'nafshei. He said on himself, before he quoted the name of Rav Huna, now he's quoting his own memory, which is Hadamar shinei makom tzarech levereich, lo amran el b'dvarim shein tunim bracha l'achreim bim koman. That's only true when you're talking about things that do not require a bracha in place. Things that require you to come back and make a bracha in that location, then you do not have to make a bracha. By taima, what's the reason? The kiva kama hadar. He's going to have to return to his original location. Whether that means literally he has to return to it, or his meal is not over, one of those two meanings. And Rav Sheshen says you have to make a bracha on both of them. Doesn't matter. So now what we had here is, we have that Shini Makom need to make a bracha. Now we have another definition, another breakdown of that, which is that din applies depending on what type of bracha you have to make. The bracha corona that you have to make require you to return to this location. The bracha corona that you make does not require you to return to this location. Three-way makloket in the Mishonim as to what this means. The Rashbam over here says that any of the Shibata Minim that require a bracha Me'ein Shalosh, plus Birkat HaMazon are all included in this. Those are brachot that require you to return to your location, and because of that, you don't have to make a new bracha. That's what's defined here, meaning that they require bracha bim koman. That's what the Rashbam says over here. Tosafot rejects the Rashbam's explanation and says it only applies to hamotzi and chameshin mimnei dagan. So it's hamotzi and mizonot. Those are the only things that require you to come back to the original location. And therefore, those are the things that do not require a new bracha when you move location to location. Opinion of the Rashbam, that it only applies to hamotzi. Doesn't apply to anything besides hamotzi. You have a list of different opinions here as to the extent of which this din applies, which allows you to move from makom to makom. The narrower your definition of what needs to come back to makom, right, then the narrower your ability to move from makom to makom without making a bracha. Right, the way the Rashbam explains it over here is that the fact that you have to make a bracha chrona in this location means that when you leave the location, your assumption is that you're going to return to the location to make the bracha. That means you haven't ended your meal.
When you stand up, you haven't terminated the meal, because standing up in and of itself is not the termination of the meal. The termination of the meal is making the bracha. On the other hand, for items that you do not need to make a bracha in this location, as soon as you stand up, that automatically terminates the meal, because now you have to make a, if you're going to move to the new location, you're going to make a bracha achrona, bari nefashot, because going to the new location, you're not coming back here. You're done. So getting up ends the meal because you do not have to return. And so the action of getting up is the termination of the meal. So that's how the Rashbam explains the difference here between these two ideas. If you have to make, I'm going with the Rashbam's definition now, if you have to make a bari nefashot, standing up, you've ended your meal. You were drinking some juice, now you stand up, you have to make a bari nefashot, because you don't have to come back anymore. That's it. You're done. The meal's over. You got to make your bracha achrona, and when you go somewhere else, you got to make a new bracha rishona. All right. So as we said before, that again, then we'll do the conclusion of this sugya. But if one washes in the morning with having in mind, then you can override some of these issues. And most of them believe that you have to eat then at that time. Right. There is inyan pesach hadat. So that comes up. That's a question of how far you can take this. Meaning that does having in mind to move override this issue of pesach hadat? The other thing is, and I'll mention when we move into the next sugya, is what exactly is it when you move place to place, what brachos do you have to make? In that when I say you terminate or don't terminate, then what happens now? So that's what we're going to say here in the next part of the sugya. Meitave. Nechabura sheyu mesubim lishtot. They sat down to drink. Akru lagahem letzeit. And then they got up to leave. Likrat chatan. They went to greet the chatan. It's like the wedding scenario. O likrat kala or to greet the kala. Shein yutzim ain't to name bracha lemafreya. When they go out, they don't have to make a bracha lemafreya. Shein chozrin ain't to name bracha lechatchila. And when they come back, they don't have to make a new bracha. But medorim amurim, when's that chuchin yichusham zakeno chole? They left somebody behind at the table. Avaloi nichola sham lo zakein velo chole. They don't leave anybody behind at the table. Shein yutzim to name bracha lemafreya. When they leave, they have to make a bracha lemafreya retroactively. Shein chozrin to name bracha lechatchila. When they come back, they need to make a new bracha rishona. So over here, the definition, this is what Shoal was asking before. Wait a minute, what about this idea that you have to leave somebody at the table? Here is that, so again, this is the Braita, and now we have to discuss again, Shinu Makom, how broad is your Shinu Makom? And leaving somebody at the table might have to do with how far away you're moving from the table at that time. So the Gemara says, Miktani Akruga Gehem, since it says that they uprooted their feet, means that they were Koveya something here, Miklau, B'dvarim, Aturim, Bracha, Achrem, Bimkoman, Askin. We're dealing with a place where they would have to come back to make their bracha achrona. That's what we're dealing with here. Otherwise, to say akru raglehem has no meaning. Akru raglehem means that they're leaving a location that has significance. It only has significance if you have to return to it because you have a bracha achrona. But taimo, the only reason it works is deni chusham zakein ocholehu. Right? That's why it works. The kshein yotzim intunim bracha lemafreya. They don't require a bracha achrona. Kshein chozin intunim bracha lechatchila. You don't require a bracha rishona. Then they require bracha chrona and new bracha rishona. Kasha the Rav Chista. That's a problem for Rav Chista's statement over there. Now, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachum Yitzchak, Ma Antana Akirot. Who's the one that says that Kira is a problem? Rav Yehuda. That's Rav Yehuda. And we'll do the Braita in a second of Rav Yehuda. But what you have here is a Braita that says that if you leave the location, then you need to make a bracha achrona and a bracha rishona. That's the way the Rambam paskins. The Rambam paskins that if you leave the location, then you should make a birkat amazon, and then we make a bracha rishona when you want to continue the meal. If you didn't leave behind a zakein, you didn't leave behind a chuleh, then you would have to come back, you have to make a birkat amazon, and then a bracha rishona. Tosafot over here says that's not the case. He says, look, if you're planning to leave, and nobody's going to stay behind, you should bench. Because you never know how long you're going to tarry. And if you tarry too long, you won't be able to bench when you come back. But if you don't bench, when you come back, you do not need to bench. He says you simply have to make a new bracha rishona. Because all you had was what we call hesek hadat or hefsek between the bracha rishona and the next bracha rishona. You're not ready to bench. You want to continue your meal. So to bench and then make another bracha rishona is unnecessary. So what you have to do is simply make a new bracha rishona. So that's a machlok between the Rambam and the Tosafot as to what the requirement is here. The Rambam says if you leave and didn't bench, you have to come back, bench, and then make a new bracha rishona. Tosafot says that's not necessary. If you're leaving, you should bench. And that's what it means here, the mafreya. You should bench because you never know how long you're not going to be here for. But if you didn't bench, the only thing you need to do is make a bracha rishona when you come back. Because all you did was be your mafsik in the meal. So you make a new bracha rishona to eat, and then you make one benching for both of those meals that are there. You're still in the same location. So that's a machlok bishonim about that issue as to what's the requirement here. Once you've done this, then what is the requirement? Do you have to bench or you do not have to bench? We pass on like Tosafot, they don't have to bench. The only thing you have to do is make a new bracha Rishona. So therefore, where if you terminated your meal for whatever reason, for instance, you said, I want a bench. And that's a reason to say that the meal's over. Then if you want to continue the meal, you need to make a new bracha Rishona. You don't have to actually bench in order to continue the meal.
But you had in mind you were coming back.
Correct. As long as if you had in mind originally when you made the first bracha Rishona that you had in mind to come back, then it might work. If you all of a sudden decide in the middle of the meal that you want to do that, then it may not work because the original bracha wasn't made with that intent in mind. The Tanya, could we have a bright there? Friends, they were together at a meal. They got up to go to shul or to go to Beit Midrash. They do not require a bracha afterwards. They don't have to make a new bracha Rishona. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, amid very mamurim bizman shein yichusham miktzad chaverim. That's only if they left some people behind. Avaloi yichusham miktzad chaverim. They didn't leave some people behind. Shein yutzim tunim bracha lemafreya. Then they do require a bracha lemafreya. Shein chozrim tunim bracha chatkila. They require a new bracha rishona. So therefore, we have a brayta here that says that Rabbi Yehuda is the author of this position that when you leave the place, you have to leave people behind. But the Rabbanon don't believe that. We had the Rabbanon who had the Tanakama, and they argue on Rabbi Yehuda. We'll come back to this tomorrow. Question is, does the Tanakama really disagree with Rabbi Yehuda? And that has to do with this, Bamed Varim Amurim. Bamed Varim Amurim, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara in Sanhedrin argues when Rabbi Yehuda says, Eimatayr, Bamed Varim Amurim, in a Mishnah or a Braita, what does that mean? Does that mean that he's coming to define or extend that which the Tanakama says, or he's coming to argue on the Tanakama? The Machlokin in Sanhedrin, the Rashbam over here quotes the opinion that Bamed Dvarim Amurim means that he's arguing. So if he's arguing, that means that there's a Tanakam, the Rabbanon disagree with Rabbi Yehuda. There are other Rishonim who believe here that Rabbi Yehuda, when he says Bamed Dvarim Amurim, is explaining the Tanakam, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakam are not necessarily different, and because of that, they'll come up with a different Pesach Halach. Again, we'll leave that for tomorrow. But what the Gemara concluded from this is that the Tanakam, or at least if you think they're differentiated, the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda is the one who requires you have people left behind. So Rabbi Yehuda is a problem for Rabbi Chisda. But Rabbi Chisda says, I hold like the Chachamim. I hold like the Tanakama. And the Tanakama says you do not have to leave anybody behind when it's something that is a bracha, that's something that's tuna, a bracha acharehem. Now, the Gemara says from that is Medayik. Ella, taima dib dvarim atunim bracha acharehem bim koman, shen yotzim, ein tunim bracha lemefreyev, shen chozin, ein tunim bracha lechatkila. Advarim, shen tunim bracha acharehem bim koman, afilu rabbanan, shen yotzim, tunim bracha lemefreyev, Shein chuzrim, tunim bracha lechatchila. Well, that's only true when it requires a bracha afterwards. But if it doesn't require a bracha afterwards, we have to come back to that location, then it would be a termination of the meal. So what do you see from that? The Gemara says, well, let me have it to Yufta, the Rabbi Yochanan. That should be a problem for Rabbi Yochanan before who said that yidei yain yatsu, that should be a problem. The Gemara says, lavi miyot vini hadik zima. Then we already questioned Rabbi Yochanan. We already had a tiyufta from a braita before. What do you bring another tiyufta on Rabbi Yochanan? Zvei maha, nami habi tiyufta. This will also be a problem for Rabbi Yochanan. If you figure a way to answer the first one, I have another braita for you that's going to cause a problem for Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan Shita is heavily challenged by these braitos that we have over here. Now the Rashbam said, why don't we answer on Rabbi Yochanan's behalf that there's a difference between something that's tuna bracha achareihem b'mekomam and not. You could have answered the braita before, which is the braita that says that shinei makom is a problem. You could say shinei makom is a problem when you're talking about brachot that do not require you to go back to location. He's talking about yayin, at least according to the Rashbam. And according to the Rashbam, yayin is a bracha achareihem that requires a bracha bimkomo. And therefore, there's no problem of shinui makom according to the Rashbam. So Rashbam asks on himself, how come we don't answer on behalf of Rabbi Yochanan? There's a difference between yayin and other brachot. And that's how you can answer the braita. He says, because Rabbi Yochanan, who is an amora, has an obligation to define his position. With a braita, you can have some sort of ambiguous statement. Because the braitot or the mishnayot are written as memory aids, and they were done earlier on, they were used to trigger something. So when they're triggering something, then they can write in a ambiguous term, and you have to be, we can then define what it means. We can explicate on it. But an amora has an obligation when he makes a statement to make a statement as clear as possible. If he makes a statement that shinui makom doesn't matter, then we're going to apply that to everything. We're not going to say, oh, he means it here and doesn't mean it here, because that's something he should have said. And the fact that he didn't say it means that that's not what he believes. And therefore, when Rabbi Yochanan said shinui makom doesn't matter, he says it across the board. And that's why the Gemara doesn't answer on behalf of Rabbi Yochanan that there's a difference between something that's doing bracha achareihem bimkoman versus that does not require bracha achareihem bimkoman. And that's why these braitot present a serious problem for Rabbi Yochanan's position, unlike what we do for Rav Chisda in the name of Rav Huna, which is that where he defined the difference between them, we're going to answer on his behalf that difference exists. Okay, stop here.